Vinay, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for
I know how busy you are, and I really appreciate that you have given me time to talk to you today. So, Vijay Goyal, Mr. Vijay Goyal, lawyer, philanthropist, humanitarian, or troubleshooter, which one do you think is more closely associated with you?
So, I would say go-to person.
Okay.
So, that's kind of... suits me, or over a period of time, I got evolved as a like kind of a go-to person where people need a solution. Whether it's a start with legal, which is my bread and butter. Anybody would like to do things in India, which is our specialization. So my uncle, Mr. D.C. Singhania, I started a firm in 1969. And we are one of the major firm in India. So we have many offices. So we start with any foreign company want to navigate India, we help them. We help them A to Z, finding a partner, helping any, taking any help from government or any drafting their joint venture agreement or to tell them their strategy, how to go to India, that kind of thing. And I landed here in 2000. And so then we started doing reverse as well, helping Indian company to navigate rest of the world. Because Indian company became a little bit richer or more, you can say, the relevant in the whole world from 2000 onward. So we thought to ride on that journey, and we assisted at least 20, 30 companies to establish in UK and many more. So we helped them again how to navigate the UK market, European market, and other places. 1990,
right.
So India started liberalizing, but it took time to company to grow bigger. Before that, there was no company in India worth 100 billion, not even, you know, many limited company, even 10 billion market cap. So the real, the growth in India started, you can say, after 2000.
Right. And you mentioned your uncle, Mr. D.C. Singhania. Do you consider him as your mentor or like a coach or guide? Or...
Yeah, so in life, you know, first my father, I have a lot of respect and I get a lot of, you know, like basic principle from him. And then my uncle, Mr. Singhania, again, he was world renowned. He was the person who will find a solution. Amazing knowledge. I never met anyone like him, who has so much of depth of the knowledge and who has traveled around the world, has met people like Bill Gates and brought them to India. So Microsoft was our client, and our office address in Delhi used to be the head office of Microsoft, and our people used to be the initial shareholder. So he certainly has a lot of influence on me.
Right. Right, that was a great, great effort by him at that time, getting Bill Gates and Microsoft.
Absolutely, yeah.
And likewise, I think you got to meet with a lot of different kind of people throughout your career. I saw your pictures with the King and Queen here, and Prime Ministers, and Bill Clinton, and others as well. So how does it kind of, you know, takes you to on your journey when you meet these dignitaries and people? Does it help you in your professional career or working on the assignments you are looking at, or is it more like just in getting inspired by them?
So it's a journey, Praveenji. You know, like London is a place where access is a little bit easy compared to India. Like, you know, had it been in India, then it would be very difficult to meet people like Mr. Clinton or King and Queen. So London certainly is a good place. And I've been fortunate and blessed to be at the right place and in the company of the right people as well. And then I worked towards it. You know, I started Indo-European Business Forum as a chairman in 2007. And we have people like Mr. G.P. Hinduja, Mr. Anil Agarwal, Mr. S.P. Lohia from Indorama, and many, many big people from India, Europe, and the rest of the world on our board. So that again creates a cloud. And then I've been doing many events in India and UK and Europe to create a visibility and to transform the business between this corridor. And then I was a chairman of London Chamber Asian Business Association. That again creates a profile, networking, visibility. So then I became chairman for SOCHM for UK as well. And then I joined many charities. So like I'm one of the board member or ambassador of Barnardo's, where earlier the Queen was involved, and now again some of the royal family members are involved. So that helps. And it's a lot to learn from these people. They are there because of the reason they have done, they have achieved well in their life. So whenever I meet someone, I try to imbibe or try to learn something good. And whether I can implement that or not, which time will tell. But certainly, like, I'm trying my bit.
So, according to you, what does define success? What does define a person as a successful person? What do you think a success is?
So, success for everyone is different. Like in my case, like you may be thinking I'm a successful person, but I have again up and down, low and high. So I sometimes feel I've not achieved anything yet. So lot to do, So again, it is a person to person, but success, I personally would say, if people respect you, and you feel sense of little bit fulfillment, sense of achievement, or and but again, is comparatively, like, some people may have not achieved success in career or in money or in power, fame, name, but they are happy, so it's very difficult. Yes.
So do you think success is proportionate to happiness? Is that what it is?
Generally, in my limited knowledge, it is not proportionate to the happiness, because some people are from outside, it
Right.
looks they are super super successful, but they are not happy,
Yeah.
so but it should be linked to the
Okay. That
happiness.
I think I agree to that. It
Yes.
should be linked to that in a way.
Yeah.
But then that is there or maybe are there many quality or values which makes a person successful person? Do somebody need them?
Yeah, I personally believe yes.
Right.
Some people are born lucky, where which family you born, and which atmosphere, and that's a born lucky kind of thing. But otherwise, to be successful as a normal human being, the first ingredient is working hard.
Okay.
There is no alternate to work hard.
Right.
Whether it's looking after your health, that's prime thing. Then looking after people around you, and then constantly, defining, redefining your goal, make a task of what you need to achieve and how you need to achieve, and then keep chasing. In whether as a lawyer or whether as a businessman, whether as a kind of connecting people or deal making, every time, every day, every moment, I have to think what next. And let's say tomorrow I send a message to someone, he doesn't respond. Then again, I have to remind myself that I have to chase him, because it's like constantly working hard, and there is no stop. Like, you cannot think like today, okay, I've done 5 days, Monday to Friday, and then it's done. Or I have worked from 9 to 5 or 9 to 6 or 9 to 7, it's done. I personally feel if you want to do something in life, when you want to create your space, create visibility, it's like 7 days a week, 24 hour. You cannot say that, okay, after 10 o'clock I stop, or on the weekend I stop. So I think you sacrifice many people think, like your personal life or family time, or you do sacrifice. So I think working hard is certainly number one.
Right.
And then you, with other ingredient, like be honest, be straightforward, that's I feel personally, and be humble, be approachable, and keep learning. So I think these are the ingredient, I would say.
Where does the loyalty stand in there?
It does. I personally feel, one has to be loyal. Like even in my case, in this company, Singhanian company, I'm there from 1998.
Wow.
And I never thought, you know, like not even for single 1 second that I should look for something else or whatever. You know, like I think personally, that's one of the key ingredients as well. Loyalty, you know, loyal to your family, loyal to your friends, loyal to the people you work for, the loyal to your client, loyal to your employee, employer, everyone, your stakeholder, you have to be loyal.
That's true. May I just maybe try and bring a new dimension? So I think you said hard work is very essential.
Yes.
And nowadays you hear a lot of well-being and wellness
yes.
coming up on most of the employers' yeah. radar, and they want to promote that.
Yes.
And especially when you're saying that you should be available or accessible
yes.
beyond certain yes. fixed hours. So maybe do you think that applies to more entrepreneurial mindset, or does it apply to everybody as per se?
So that applies to more on entrepreneurial mindset, because if you are an employee, then employer cannot expect that, you know, the employee will be available 7 days a week or all the time, 24 hours needed.
Right.
Or you can take some employee, let's say, whom you would need any point of time. And then when before hiring, if you tell them, like whether it's up to them, whether they want to take up that job or not.
Yes.
And then you incentivize to them accordingly, and you tell them your job is, if there is any need, then you are supposed to be available.
Or maybe I think you're perhaps suggesting, and I'm not trying to yeah. mold your words, but I think maybe for those employees who really want to achieve great success in their yeah. life, they may have to do beyond the fixed scope of their
yeah,
work.
Yeah, absolutely. That is one. Or secondly, some employers where you define the role, and then this is the role you are supposed to be available whenever is needed, extra hour or weekend, whatever. And it's up to the employee to accept the role or not.
Right.
So, that way.
I mean, I don't know whether you came across recently, there was a debate in India going on about 70 hours working week
yeah.
and whatnot. And so I think suppose perhaps that's, but I think, yeah, I think I got your point. It's more about if the person, individual has got more hunger to succeed in
yeah.
their life,
yes.
they need to go beyond their scope, which is defined for
absolutely.
Them. They have to break the balance.
Absolutely, 100%.
Right. And are you a person who thinks smart work is required as well as the hard work? They go hand in hand? Or do you think smart work has got no place, only hard work has got
no
place?
No, I think smart work is more important than the hard work.
Right.
Let's say you work 7 days a week and not achieving anything. So I would say smart work is more important than the hard work.
Right.
But certainly it goes hand in hand. It should not be that, okay, like, you know, you are working smartly and then not working hard.
Right.
So certainly. It has to be combination of both.
Right. I think that's fair enough to say. And then you touched upon that working hard, loyalty, and then I think you said attention to details as well, that they should really look into the things in a more careful manner when they're doing
that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Moving on from this particular aspect, I think maybe if I can just take you back to your initial stages of the journey where you mentioned that you looked at your father as your role model. So were these qualities from your father that you adopted?
My father, I feel very honest, very hardworking, straightforward, you know, and believe in karma and looking after people around him and not to be greedy. So I think these are the basic things which I have gotten from him.
Right. And he was from India, of course. You were in India in the initial years. So you spent a long time in India?
So I was born in 74. Until 2000, I was in India. So almost 26 years.
Right.
I was in India, yes.
And was there any kind of like a learning curve which you took from India when you came to London, and that helped you in your kind of progression here?
So I never dreamt to come to London, you know.
Right.
So I belong from a small village and in UP. So my beginnings are super humble, you know. Even my English was poor and still poor. So I could never, I never tried, or I could never get a UK proper accent as well. But the key was, like, keep working, keep trying to focus on what you do, and working hard, and that's way. And if I look back, sometimes I feel I don't know how I completed that journey, and it looks like yesterday. There's so many ups and downs in between, but Indian culture is, I think, one is entrepreneurial. So it is inbuilt in at least my gene, be like kind of entrepreneurial mind. And second thing, like keep working. And these are the two things which I brought it from India, and I continued on that journey.
Right. I think that's fair enough to say. And is there any childhood memory you really cherish? There may be many memories if you want to mention.
Yeah, a lot of, yeah, like even living in London from 23 year plus, I still dream of India, or all my childhood, like where I grew up, like yes, in a village. So it's still like hardly I get any dream of London. So it's somehow inbuilt deep inside in my mind, and all the good childhood memories, you know.
So when you went to school there, would that be maybe around 80s, 84? That's the time period. When did you leave the village roughly?
So I left in 1990.
That's the when you left the village?
Yes, correct. So 1990, I went to Lucknow.
You must have been 16, 17
16 years.
Right.
Correct.
So I have some vague memories of my village, yes, where the school was, and then we used to carry this big like board, blackboard.
Yeah. No, it's not like that. It was,
so it wasn't like that in your
village? It was properly, like proper concrete building school.
Right.
With 100 rooms, but basic facilities.
Right.
And so there was no, like, there was no, it was high school and inter, but the exam used to happen somewhere else.
Right.
So we used to go via taxi or via bus or to give the exam, and very limited sports facility. So, and I think, again, at that time, the technology was not great. There was no iPhone, there was no mobile set, no communication on that, emails kind of thing. So it was like pen, pencil and book. But really, even my school days, I used to work hard, and I used to also support my father on the business side as well. Like I used to go to my shop and mill and kind of help him in between and after his school or like that. And I was self-motivated. I was always self-motivated. Even my father said, why are you like studying so hard? But it was self-motivation. And there was a point came after 12th, which is like intermediate. Then, so my father said, what do you want to do? So I said, I would like to go out of the place called Tikonia, because there was no further school, there was no education. He said, if you want, we have this, you know, kind of a mill or a shop. Continue the business. I said, I would like to study. So he said, okay, most welcome. And then I took that year, there was an entrance exam in Lucknow University. And so first time, then five of my, you know, like the friend, we appeared for that exam. And Lucknow was far at that time. We used to take a evening train and be reaching there in Lucknow, and staying with someone known from the family.
Yes, yes.
And giving exam and come back. The result came back, only I could qualify for the entrance. So again, the journey started. I reached Lucknow, and it was a hard time. Then I stayed in the hostel, and initially it was a little bit of kind of ragging or a little bit of bullying with the seniors, but not that harsh. And in that environment, so the first time out of the village to a bigger place, city of like big people, like
capital city
of UP. And in the hostel also, there were close to 100 rooms, 200 students, and from all over UP.
Right.
So people were from Meerut, from Gorakhpur, from Basti. And the once you land there, there's a lot of caste system as well.
Right.
So people were like, this is the Baniya, this is the Pandit, this is the Thakur, and everyone had their lobby.
Right.
And they were a student from, the Lucknow University was a little bit notorious. A lot of Gundagardi was there, and some of our student leader, they were so-called leader at the time, and they were there for 10, 20 years.
Of course, because that's how their political career
started. So yes, The hostel rent was very low, maybe 100 rupee per four whole year.
Yes.
And even the tuition fee in the university was very low. And but you had to look after yourself. There was no food provision. So we had to like kind of, I was the first person who used to walk. And nobody in the hostel used to walk. So I used to get up in the morning and go for a walk. And then people started following me. Then I was the first person who, generally there was a shop behind the hostel and all my mates used to go and have a tea and bun. And I thought, no, it's not good. Tea is, because my parents told me tea is not good. And so I used to go and bring the cow milk and I used to carry the utensil and go and drink the fresh milk initially, and everyone used to laugh, but I never cared. And then I used to bring the milk, make a dalia or drink milk with bread, and then there was no provision of like kind of lunch or dinner. So then we used to go out, look for a restaurant and then go for it. Then all, they were roughly...
So what, like those dhabas?
The dhabas, okay. Correct.
Then, because when you say restaurant,
yeah, it's yeah, like the dhabas, lunch. Correct. Right. Then, some of our friends, we decided to create a common, we hired a cook and then we used to like give him material and he used to make lunch and dinner. So we used that's to all and,
no, yeah.
And yeah, and then share the expenditure. So that journey started from 90 till 98. I was in that hostel and I have super good memories of that hostel. I did my BCom. LLB, and then I also joined Jaipuria Group of Institute. It was new, and luckily I qualified for my PGDBA, like MBA in business. And when I joined MBA again, it was difficult. I used to clear written exam of many MBA, but I could not qualify for group discussion, which was like because my vocal English was poor. And in the group discussion, I could not qualify. But in Jaipuria, luckily it happened. And so when I reached Jaipuria, it was again a new world for me. Because in Jaipuria at that time, the students were from across India, not only from UP. There were students from Bangalore, students from Calcutta, students from Delhi. And they were super fluent. They came all from convent and I was again from simple, humble Beijing. So I found... kind of, I don't know how I will survive. But luckily, again, as I said, hardworking. And during like my time, 4 semesters in Jaipuria also, I was, there was only 2 boys from the finance side who got a placement in Delhi. I was one of them. And so I did well there as well. And even in my graduation in Lucknow University has many colleges attached
yes,
with that.
Yes, they have it.
And I realized that in the final year, when I passed, I was number 11th in whole university. So generally they published till 10th, but I don't know somehow I came to know I was number 11 in the university as well. So I think, again, the credit goes hard work, you know, like...
to the efforts you put in.
To the efforts you put in.
Wow.
Then you get a result. So from there, from Lucknow, then journey started in Delhi. I joined Guinea Filament as a management trainee. And then within 1 or 2 months, then I was called by my uncle. And then I joined Singhania & Company in 98. And then from there, it becomes history.
Wow. Well, that's really incredible. I mean, 98 perhaps is the year when I entered the law school. Anyway, but isn't it interesting that the Lucknow perhaps maybe it's changed now.
Yes.
But at the time, it was still about the same what you explained.
Yeah.
That the universities would have that old traditional methods of like, you know, functioning and the students. I don't know if, I mean, they have a mess because I never stayed in the hostel. But yeah, I mean, that view. But you did quite well. So you organized a cook and everybody.
Not me together, like all my friends.
That's really good.
Yes, correct.
Yes. And I think your leadership skills were kind of like getting polished there. So when you came to London, I think that really added on.
Yeah, at that time, I would say the hostel life has given me more independence.
Right.
So, you know, once you are away from your home, so you are away from your basic comfort zone.
That was the first time.
That's the first time in life, you know. So, and you had to struggle hard every day.
Right.
Like you had to, like imagine at the age of 16, You are living in a big city amongst unknown people and making your own breakfast, lunch, dinner.
And
And
were you kind of cooking at home, or were you learning? Like,
no,
how
so
did that came to you? I mean,
no, I
as
never learned cooking at home. So
okay.
there, I never used to like cook the food. I used to only make dalia and the breakfast, and then lunch and dinner either at a dhaba or later on in a common mess which we created food. But then again, the hostel life, the people there are a lot of notorious people as well. So it's like everyday challenge.
Yeah,
So and
yes. So,
so.
but you were initially, sorry to cut you, but initially you were having ragging and maybe bullying.
Yeah.
But then when you became senior,
I never did.
you never, okay,
No.
you never. And about the food, I mean,
Yes.
have you pursued food making even now? And do you make
No,
any
I
food?
know I can make a basic food.
Okay.
Yeah. But my wife cooks well, and she also learned here. She never cooked in India. So, yeah. So we both, help each other.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, some people say that they manage to learn so much that there's some of the dishes they continue later on in their life. But I suppose, yeah, dalia maybe not the everyday
No.
thing. So tell me about when, after Delhi, when you came to London, how was your experience here? I mean, from perhaps let's say from the day one.
So day one, I didn't know anyone, like apart from one of my colleague who was in the office. There were some people who were here. They left Singhania. They kind of created their own, and there was a rumor that Singhania is closing down. So it was a task. We had a posh location office at Buckingham Gate, and the expenditures were very high, and income became very low. So I struggled, I struggled. I never took a salary kind of thing for years, and kept working hard. Then I thought, we cannot just survive on Indian law. So, and then we tried to take some local people here. They were super helpful. And then we started kind of doing local work here. And the easy thing was to do immigration and convincing. So we started, we took a license, we took insurance, and we started doing like kind of property, immigration, a little bit of corporate, and slowly, slowly grew the firm. And in our peak time, we used to have like close to 20 people in the office. So and that's the journey. So we were running a still modest, small law firm.
Right.
But side by side, because again, the practice of working hard, like meeting people constantly, going out every day. Going out means attending some networking. London is a place where I learn the networking part, which is like here, you become a member of London Chamber or many more. I was involved with most of the thing. And then you every day, like you sacrifice your personal time, but you go out, meet, network, exchange card. And so today in my office, I must have till now, in last 23 years, must have given 50,000 card to the people.
Wow.
And I have collection of 20,000 visiting card in my office. And in my phone book, I have 24,000 connect.
So no wonder
So
everybody knows you in
yeah,
London.
so correct. It's like not one day affair.
Yes.
It's a Parvinji, the day you came until now, you constantly meeting 10, 20 people every day. And like remain, you don't change the line. You don't, because like people will know you, people know how you behave, what is your personality. So, and that's why the network grew.
Wow, and I think, like you said, your personality trait, your
Yes.
approachability,
Yeah.
your behavior, I think
Yes.
that all counts and adds into
Absolutely.
this,
Correct.
because the people will ca take you seriously and
Yes.
carry on with you in your
Yeah.
life if they think that you are a genuine person
Not only
to.
genuine person, even approachable person. Like
Yes.
if you are close-minded, you say, no, I will do only this. It's my approach, then people may not approach.
Right.
People come and discuss many things, and then wherever possible, you find a solution, whether the financial solution, legal solution, connecting with them, with our different companies or different set of people that we keep doing.
And do you think it also makes you more aware of what's going on in the business world
Absolutely, very much.
on the day-to-day basis?
Absolutely. Day to day, what other people are doing in terms of business, what is the trend, where we are going, so whether it's a recession, whether one sector is up, other is down, so certainly you are more aware.
And I don't know whether I should bring it, but you were at Davos many times.
Yes.
You went there.
Yes.
So, I mean, does that take account in there as well? Do they really keep an eye on what's happening in the business world?
Certainly. Davos is the kind of one of the biggest economic event in the world.
Right.
And you have all kind of people, top to top people from around the world, and they certainly have pulse of what's happening in the whole world. And so the politicians, businessmen, policy makers, rulers, they all go, and then they try to meet other like-minded people, share their experiences. So I've been going, trying to connect with the right kind of people. So I'm doing my bit.
So what was the feeler this time? Is there something kind of like new in the business?
So this time, India was more prominent.
Right.
There were more than 10 installed for India.
Really?
Yeah, and there was some chief minister. Many people come even for a day. They come from India to meet the CM, sign some MOU, and go back. So Indian presence was very prominent. And apart from that, they were focusing on artificial intelligence. And so it was good. There was a friend, Sachin Dugal, who's built a company called Builder AI.
Right.
And his stall was big. He was giving multiple presentation on artificial intelligence. So AI was big and Indian dominance was big this time.
Right. That's interesting. Because I suppose maybe they realize the potential in India. Is that the reason?
They realize the potential. Like only India is on the journey for, as I said, from developing nation to developed nation. It's right. Called Viksit Bharat.
How long do you think it should take?
It will take, I think, not less than 10 years.
Okay. Great.
So on that journey, Indian companies are becoming wealthier. They have more cloud, they have more money power, so they can afford to have installed in Davos, because let's say they were 10 or 15. So every install you have, it cost 3, 4, 5 million pounds. It's not easy. So smaller companies cannot afford. If we talk about 10 years ago, there were not many Indian companies who could afford that kind of expenditure on daily basis. Today is happening. The state government are more outward looking as well. So like we have installed from Maharashtra, Telangana, Tamil Nadu, UP. UP was there first time. So yeah, Karnataka and many more. So I think the Indian states, Indian business people, CII was very prominent. They are powerful. They are mighty. They have money power.
So that is a reflection. Interesting. That's really good. Actually, I think I'm happy about this because yes. India is trying to push hard.
Correct.
To get into the more international domain. I mean, they were doing it, but these new platforms.
Yes. Right.
It's interesting. And then you mentioned about the AI.
Yes.
Was there kind of, nowadays, every time you hear about AI, there's some sort of threat perspective people are bringing into jobs and everything. Do you have a view on that?
So it will change the paradigm. People have to learn. Many jobs will be obsolete. So I think every country, every business person, every society has to evolve themselves. Like what kind of job today, many of them will become completely obsolete, but new kind of job will come. So certainly AI will impact everyone, whether they like it or not like it. So if they change themselves as quickly as possible, that is good for them, whether for business or for government or for any organization.
Right. And I may not have the correct references here, but I mean, do you watch movies? That's why I'm
asking. I do. Yeah.
Okay. So there was an English movie, a very old movie called Terminator, and it was perhaps related to AI, like how AI became a little bit more advanced and it started kind of trying to overtake humanity.
Yeah. Which will, in my opinion, that will never happen.
Okay.
So the human touch is necessary. Even today, let's say during COVID, we all gone and do Zoom or team call. But like we are sitting down and talking, this conversation can never happen on Zoom. You cannot share your feeling on Zoom or team. You come discuss business point to point and then thank you.
Yeah.
So it is very difficult to build a relationship on Zoom. It's like generally you have a Zoom for business and then that fulfillment sense of or knowing person on Zoom, it never happens. So unless until you meet a person in and see an eye to eye, or you talk some other thing as well, that cannot be replaced. So many things will not be replaced. So although whatever happens, the humanity will not go away.
Right. So you think the human behavior and human attributes,
Yes.
like we are sitting here,
Yes.
you know, you can, like you said, eye to eye.
Yes.
So all these kind of exchanges, what we do
Yes.
beyond the verbal communication is
Yeah.
important for us.
Absolutely, very much.
Yeah,
Yes.
that's going to be a great point. I think generally you're right on those video or the virtual communication. That's the one thing which is mostly missing.
Yes.
And people like that, the individual presence. Do you think it has to do with the energy of the people as well? I mean, like you enter into a room and
Yes.
then you just want to walk away, or some room you enter, you want to stay in there. Is that something
It's
you connect with?
like energy of the people, aura of the people, and your energy as well.
Yeah.
And you know what mind frame you are in. Are you stressed? Are you happy? Are you keen learner? You want to curious, want to know more about others. There are multiple factors.
Right.
But certainly there is no substitute or alternate for meeting one to one.
Right. So you've been a great networker, and you've been a good person, and you have done a lot better. So what's the kind of your tip? Let's say you enter a room and you find the energy is not really meeting you, even though you might be on the highest possible spirit.
Yes.
Does that give you a challenge, or is this it's okay, it's fine?
So in networking, one thing is you have to take initiative.
Right.
Because what happens sometime, you go in the room where 10 people, 20, or even 100 people are there, and you are always shy. Who will start? Who will go to the other person and start some conversation? Introduce yourself. Because let's say there are three, four people talking to themselves, and you just enter into the room, and then what you do? It's up to you. You will feel, even in my case, I have to decide, and it comes a point where I said, leave it, you know, they are talking, why should I intrude? Why should them? I said, no, boss, you are here, you have to meet people. Otherwise, what is the purpose of coming?
Right.
So then you go and then make a space, you know, introduce yourself, and then slowly some conversation will start. I still give my visiting card to people. Many people nowadays, 75% of people, or even 90% of people, they don't carry their business card. And then say, sometimes they'll say, okay, take this detail of my LinkedIn and connect. I said, on LinkedIn, if I connect, I have 30,000 or more,
Wow.
I won't remember you. You know, so I said, best we exchange the card, or we exchange email or telephone number, and then you get connected. So you have to take initiative, like first approach. If you don't, then particularly from networking point of view, you are missing.
Right.
So my tip is take initiative and talk to other person.
And it's like you go in, try to break the ice first by
Correct.
introducing
Absolutely.
yourself.
Introduce yourself.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
I think that, yeah. You just think maybe generally there's an awkwardness amongst people when they go into a new
Correct.
environment and they don't know
Absolutely.
how to really approach.
Yeah.
But I think generally you find people fine with that when somebody's.
So 90% of the people will be okay if you take the approach and go and introduce them. 10% may not like, because they are talking to someone they won't like. Someone new coming to that small group of two, three people.
Right.
But 90% people are okay.
Because they're for the same purpose as
They are
well.
there for the same purpose as well.
Right.
Correct.
Okay, that makes sense. Because I think networking is also a great personality trait.
Yeah.
It depends on people to people. And I think some people who may be a little bit more introvert, they might
Yes.
struggle with that. Do you consider yourself introvert, extrovert? Which way you place yourself on the field?
I would say I'm more extrovert.
Right. Okay. And were you like that since the beginning, or like over the
Yeah, I
years, you're
think
like
it
that person?
evolves.
Okay.
It evolves.
Right. Okay. And for the networking purposes, generally, when you meet people, do you think it's important to follow it up afterwards to build a
Yeah,
relationship?
very much.
Right.
Yeah. So I did multiple mistake in terms of, like, all this card I have, I should have digitalized it, make a point, like market, this person is from this industry, what conversation. You cannot remember everything.
Right.
So virtually, what is the point? You know, you keep meeting, although
So you
only
have to be
you
selective.
have to be, let's say, once you meet, let's say you meet 100 people.
Right.
Then out of that, I think it's good to draw down who are 10, 15 or 5, those who are really useful to you from your business point of view, and then follow it up. That should be the approach.
Right, okay. But the thing is, you have limited number of hours in the day. And,
yeah.
And you know, so how do you manage that?
I'm not good in that, but one has to, you know, have a proper database and then follow it up. So, yeah. So, like, today, any opportunity comes to me. So, whether I would know thousands of people, but I cannot think of more than 10 names for that opportunity.
But at least, yeah.
So at least you, which is not good. If you have proper database, if you have done the proper vetting, and then through the database, you know immediately, okay, you got this opportunity, you have 100 or 500 people in your database suitable for this opportunity, you send it to them. And that's why you get a full advantage of
that. I'm thinking about a gap here, yes. Maybe. So there could be an AI tool when you
yes,
people and say to them, oh, can you just tell this device?
No,
name
a,
and detail.
Yeah, absolutely.
Filter through my... Is that possible?
Yes, that's very
good. That should be a good help?
I personally feel there's a gap. And then someone who is in constantly meeting people, it should be good tool for them to
right.
create a database and a note on every card and every meeting. So that every time you don't need to remember.
Right. I think that's a great point, yes. Yeah, because then you'll be able to ask your own device
absolutely.
To give you that information rather than you dragging through
absolutely.
All these contacts and 30,000 contacts.
Absolutely.
I'm sure it must take hours to go
yeah,
together.
Yeah, one can go mad, don't like yes, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. So I think moving away from the networking. So you build your network and obviously you establish yourself in the kind of London legal setup and everything. And then you said you also had like Indian companies coming to UK and then you were helping them with immigration and properties. And then did you help a British company moving to India as well?
Yes, right. That's right. Our prime goal.
Right.
We help British, European, American company to go to India. We give them the kind of market strategies, help them navigate through legal company incorporation, joint ventures, help them to meet the relevant people in India, whether in business or politics or on the you know government side. So we do that. And then similarly, Indian company, when they come over here, we do A to Z for them.
Right. And then in throughout that time span, and still, I suppose, you are helping them with them, just the immigration and property?
No, everything.
Or everything?
Everything.
So what are the kind of key issues which usually stands for them? Generally, what the kind of like more tricky for them? Initial questioning, like initially do they ask?
So most of the things are around immigration.
Right. How their employees will look.
Correct. How will they be employed? How will they come to UK? And sometime, let's say if I'm buying a property, the question generally asks, will I get a visa along with that? The immigration rule has been changed over a period of time. There was a rule that you bring 250,000 pound employer to local people here, you get a visa. And so that has been changed. Then the investment scheme came, you invest 2 million, then you get investment visa. So that has been changed. So immigration rule keep changing. So most of the people from India, they ask more on the how to come to UK on the legal side. And then the property. They want to know if I buy a property, what are the taxes, duties, continuous expenditure. Third thing is fundraising. The impression in India is that the money is easily available in UK, which is not. But so how to raise money from UK, how to take advantage of cheaper cost compared to the cost in India. So those are the generally things people ask.
Right. And on the funding side, I think there's a lot of concept that they think the interest rates in these parts of the world are much lower.
It was lower before COVID.
Right.
Till the time inflation hit and then our base rate gone from 0.5 to 5. And then the bank will charge some margin and then the hedging cost becomes unviable.
But right.
Before that, it was very much viable. People used to borrow money from UK to India under external commercial borrowing route. And we were on the panel of all the Indian bank, and that kept us busy.
Right. So what's this hedging thing? How does it work in practice?
So any lender, any bank in UK, let's say Indian company borrowing money, then lender would like his money to come in pound And once money goes to India, it converts into rupees.
I
So
see.
then tomorrow, like dollar pound or dollar rupee, pound rupee rate may go up and down. So the lender want that should be fixed. So they should have a kind of hedging mechanism so that nobody is at loss. So there is a cost for the hedging. The cost for hedging is not less than 3%, 3 to 5% for a longer duration. So that has to be inbuilt into the cost to the borrower.
And the duration of loan usually is what?
Generally 5, 7 years.
Right. So they're perhaps not faring very well if they have the current
In the current
interest.
scenario, it's not viable
No, it's not
because in
viable.
India, rate of interest are from 8 to 10%, and in UK, base rate is close to 5%, and then you add bankers' margin, then you add hedging, it's not viable.
Right. So how are they coping with the environment at the moment? If the funding is easily
So
available to
what
them in
happens
India at
then
different
within
rates?
India, the bigger company are raising bonds. Money is accessible to them. And the medium companies, they generally borrow within India.
Right. Okay. And how does it work when they try to list here in the UK or UK company, Indian company, UK company try to list in India? Does it
So
really?
generally, till now, the trend has been only one way. The
Right.
Indian companies to be listed in UK. There were roughly 25 Indian companies listed. But recently, what happened, market has not been too liquid on AIM here. And then some of the Indian promoters, they virtually duped the investor. There were many Indian companies, big companies like Hiranandani, Unitech, and they all came, raised a lot of money, but
Right.
ultimately investor lost money. So the impression of the UK market on India is not super good. So that's why they are very careful when the new company comes and looking to raise money in UK.
Right. I mean, not in that notorious sense, but I think in a positive way, the
Yeah.
trend was perhaps set by Vedanta a long time ago. Is that the
No,
case?
many companies.
Many companies do
Many.
that.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Vedanta was on the main board, but on AIM also,
And of
on the
course.
junior market also, I think 28 companies are listed.
Right.
Yeah,
Oh, they
then
should.
the new concept came called a masala bond, which is like a rupee bond where investor has to take a risk on Indian rupee. So again, under that also, few billion pound has been raised in terms of rupee equivalent to rupee. And so it was super successful. But now because of rate of interest and that hedging thing, it's becoming a little bit unviable and we don't see many listing happening.
So hedging applies to the masala bond as well, even if they are doing this
So
rupee
what,
assets.
yeah, in that scenario, the investor, they do sometimes hedging to
Right.
protect themselves.
Oh, I see. So they must be doing their individual.
Individual hedging.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. And then adding the cost to the
Yes.
borrower. Fascinating. That's interesting. And do you see a new trend happening in the Indian companies now trying to raise? What do you hear all these success stories about the startups and
Yes.
everybody trying to access capital from foreign sources?
Yeah.
Is there a new trend emerging in that? I mean, there were some fiascos as well. There were some, you know.
So, new trend in sense, like the investment banker time to time keep coming with a new concept. Like few years ago, there was a big SPAC, a special purpose vehicle to be listed on US Nasdaq, and more than $86 billion were raised globally. But most of them, 30-40% gone down after listing. Some of companies are completely wiped out. So time to time, things keeps coming, evolving, and the new product coming. Like if you talk about today, in India, there's an SME market and junior market where SME company are being listed and they are getting a huge multiple of their EBITDA, like 20, 50, even up to go to 50. So Indian market in the current scenario is more buoyant than anywhere in the world.
Right, so do you think there's a huge future for Indian listed
Correct.
market,
Yes, absolutely.
even on the junior side as
Even
well?
on the junior side.
I mean, we have India BSE, NSE, and there was
There's a
one.
new market called SME market.
Okay, and there was one advertised for Ahmedabad. There was some other
Gift
ex.
City.
Right.
So
Okay.
the Gift City is a place in India where like foreign territory within India. So if you list your company there, not list in the sense, if you create
Established.
any bond
Right.
or any presence, that will be treated as a foreign entity. So you are not liable for local taxes.
So it's more like what, Dubai, another place as well?
It's like it could be Dubai or London. It's like you are creating a foreign territory. Let's say you create a fund.
Right.
That fund will be applies as a foreign jurisdiction, not as an Indian. So
Right.
you are not liable for any local taxes.
So how does it work for Indian government in terms of, especially when they're looking at the revenue
So
generating
it has
tax?
been no good for India. What happens? Let's say earlier, you were supposed to, like under LRS, liberalized remittances scheme, person of Indian origin, normal tax paying person can send $250,000 per year per person. So let's say they used to send money to UK or Dubai or Singapore, anywhere else. Now any bank or financial institution can establish a branch in the GIFT City and receive the money then and there itself. And then you can open a pound account, dollar account, or other currency account. So from Indian government point of view, at least you are creating employment, you are developing a new concept, and that's been fruitful. Now many Indian banks used to open branches all over the world. Now they need not to. They can open their office in GIFT City and can do all the foreign transactions. That will be treated as a foreign branch of Indian bank.
Right.
So you are basically saving money on sending people all the big expenditure outside India. You are creating environment within India, Indian employees, everything is Indian, so at least you are saving on that side.
And does it create any issue when, I mean, let's say within the parameters of a GIFT City, you just create the structure and
Correct.
you could function throughout the whole other parts of India?
Absolutely correct.
Right, okay. Or it's not just like a contained zone. The zone only
No,
is for
it's
the
contained zone.
right.
You are classified as a foreign company
In a GIFT City.
in the GIFT City,
Right.
and then as a foreign company, whatever you are allowed to or supposed to do, you do that.
Right. Okay. So where does this all FDI regime stands with this? The foreign direct investment
Correct.
regime in India, which 1991 liberalization brought in initially, there were certain sector
So
limitations
we
and then they
are
got opened up.
continuously like liberalizing the rules on bringing FDI to India. Most of the sectors are 100% FDI is permitted.
Yes.
So that way we are moving ahead from GIFT City point of view. So let's say as a person of Indian origin, I create a branch in the GIFT City that and keep money there. It could be pound, but when I send, because it's not FDI, but if any institutional investor send that money from GIFT City to acquire company to invest, that will be treated as FDI.
Right. So they're getting advantage on the both
Yes.
schemes. Okay. Earlier there was SEZ as well. I mean,
Yeah,
they.
there are many SEZ too,
Right,
but
okay.
they are SEZ has their own rule, and the government gives a lot of tax incentive if you establish an SEZ. Government provide a basic infrastructure for power or basic utilities.
Right. So do you know this GIFT City, is it like a central government scheme or the.
Central government,
Okay.
the central
And
government,
they only have one GIFT City in
only
India.
GIFT City in India, only one.
Okay. This is, I mean, so then the benefit of that perhaps goes more in the kind of whole countrywide.
Correct.
That's why there is no state wise. And where do you see India in terms of all these FDI and the GIFT City initiatives? Where do you think the policy wise they are heading? I mean, if you are able to, you know,
No,
personally.
so certainly India is going in the right direction. Certainly opening up multiple sector.
Right.
And earlier, if you talk about India used to import all the mobile. Today, India is in position to export billions of dollars of mobile. India, the defense sector, earlier India used to import. Today, more than $2-3 billion of defense product we are exporting. Pharmaceutical, we are exporting huge IT, more than few $100 billion of IT export out of India. So in manufacturing, like last week itself, our foreign minister has said if we want to compete with China or if you want to remain strong in the world, we have to focus on manufacturing. A lot of incentives are given on PLI production linked scheme. In some of the state government at a state level, they can offer up to 50% of the subsidy in terms of if you manufacture, let's say, a smart chip or those kind of thing in India. So there are a lot of incentive, on green hydrogen, green ammonia. So in solar, India is today number one in the whole world. So certainly we are moving forward in the right direction in electronic. We used to import everything.
Yes.
Today we started exporting on electronic item. So
Apple manufacturing.
Correct to right? India. So certainly we are at very advantageous situation under leadership of our current Prime Minister Modi ji.
Right. And with regards to the mobile industry, I mean, I heard about the chip making as well in
yes.
India. Are they able to do it still, or are they still?
They are doing it.
They're doing it.
They are doing it. Foxconn is putting a big factory in India.
Right.
So there are some local players, but most of the foreign players are coming to India into chip manufacturing.
Right. Because I think that was one thing which emerged like last 3-4 years
yes.
when everybody started talking that India should get into it and why India doesn't
Absolutely.
Have it.
Yes.
And which is great that they managed to get it now. And do you think there's more happening on the AI side as well in India?
Very much. India is very much embraced for AI in every sector. Every government department been asked to review and see what they can do. So they are mindful of how to save, protect the job.
Right.
But at the same time, how to embrace a new technology, which is good for the country. So India is all for it. Bill Gates met Prime
yes.
Minister Modi and they discussed about AI.
Right. Yeah. That was quite nicely captured.
Yeah.
I met some tea guy as well. He was making very smart tea and there was a very nice fancy photo of him with that particular person. But no, definitely. On the serious note,
yes.
Yeah, you're right. They were discussing how and which way the AI is kind of planned and working. And I think India's infrastructure maybe is ready now. More, I think, world's largest mobile users in India.
Correct.
Internet users in India.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think Jio's emergence.
And the cheapest mobile.
Right.
I would say India... the tariffs are one of the cheapest in the whole world.
That
yes.
Yeah. And you have the new mobile provider who are kind of like really entering the market. Jio was perhaps,
yes.
I think everybody says, since 2015, Indian mobile user base just shot up because they got cheapest possible data.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's very expensive everywhere else, but in India definitely is cheap. So do you think that the Indian success story is somehow reflecting in the diaspora in overseas?
Yeah, very much. You know, like if you talk about UK, we have 1.5 million people of Indian origin. We have more than 30 House of Lord of Indian origin. We have more than 10 MPs of Indian origin. So and we have money power here. We have intellectual power, money power, culture power. And the richest man of UK for many years, Mr. Hinduja. ArcelorMittal, the world's biggest steel company, Mr. Mittal lives here. So UK certainly, UK, US, Singapore, Hong Kong, there are good Indian, really money power or influence we have in the society and which reflects. So, and that is because India is shining, so that helps.
Well, let's hope that India managed to achieve the number one position in future on the economic front, I suppose, because that's where the past is that they like to talk about most of the time, that India was at one time economically quite strong. And economic background of India has been a little issue recently. But maybe it's getting sorted out. Well, look, Vijay, I think on this note, I think I just want to ask you maybe perhaps final few questions. So you support a lot of charities and do a lot of humanitarian work. Why do you think, everybody's doing it, not everybody, but a lot of people are doing it. Like you said, there are some charities which you are involved with. So why there is a need for charity in the world? Why do, there's a lot being done, but why do you think there is a need to be done more?
So I feel this mismanagement of government.
Right.
There should not be any charity.
Okay.
In terms of, there should be a system where why people need charity. You know, like if things are done properly, well, why, like as a donor, why should I have a pleasure of thinking that I have done a favor, I have done, achieved something. And a person who is receiving the charity has to receive the money. If he has been properly kind of put in a situation where he has enough work or a job or something looked after, so he doesn't need to, take money from someone else. So imagine a person who's taking money from someone else, his mental situation. So I personally feel there has to be full, but unfortunately that is not there in the world. So many state government, many central government, many African government, even in India. Like imagine today we are feeding 60-70% people, government is giving a ration to them.
Wow.
So that's not
That's a
good.
large proportion
That's a
of
large
population.
proportion. So I think there is a need because things are not done properly. And whatever can be done, that's a good, basic thing. You have to arrange the food, education, health care, shelter, water, environment. These are the basic things you have to arrange it. And so I feel if someone is able to do it, at least they should do it.
Right.
And so that at least they feel happy.
I think you mentioned an interesting thing about your father trying to do things based on karma. Do you think that has something to do doing charity?
Like in Hindu culture, it has been, or at least that I've been taught from my childhood, if you have and if you can give, whether your time, resources, money, guidance, and it comes back. So we believe in punarjanam,
Right.
rebirth.
Rebirth, yes.
So I believe in. So you want to do good, so that at least good thing happens with you, or when you need some help, at least you never know a person is what today, what will happen tomorrow.
Course.
So at least do your part, and then the rest leave it to the God.
Do you want to share more about your reincarnation bit? I'm very curious on these topics. So let's see what your understanding of this thing is and how does it work in
So I
practice.
don't have the deep knowledge, but
Right.
I do believe that you get a birth, and again, in what form, shape, we don't know. But if you have done the good job, if you have done the good deed, it should be good to you.
Right. It's like a cosmic account balance. Is that what it is
Kind of,
saying? Okay. And the karma is the credit you kind of achieve and then
absolutely.
lose. Is
Yes,
that
correct.
okay? That's really, I think, a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And then what, it continues always or does it stop anytime?
I think it continues.
It continues.
Yeah.
Okay.
Otherwise, then you will start doing wrong things.
On
It
that note,
continues.
yeah, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate you sharing your views and being so candid with me. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kavindi.